It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. We're about to go around the NFL here in the loop on a victory reaction Tuesday after your Texans get a pretty inspiring 30-6 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers and kind of sat Aaron Rodgers down. It does feel like he is done, as he has hinted a lot of times this year that it feels like he'll be done. And I don't know that that was inspiring for him to return. We did ask, though, what is as satisfying as that feeling of retiring Aaron Rodgers? And there's still great answers rolling in from the 3-4-6, growing up short and then finally hitting 6 foot. Oh, yeah,
oh,
baby.
Oh, baby, that's
oh,
big.
Oh, yeah.
Can't relate to that one.
It's all big, good. But you act like it, and I respect that about you. Somebody said, when their car started after rebuilding the engine by themselves. So the first time you get that thing to turn over after putting all these little different, gauges and stuff in there.
I can't relate to that one, but that's got to be a great feeling.
That sounds, but I mean, you built things together.
No, the closest I get is when you're fixing, like I was fixing our generator the other day.
Oh yeah, that feels like that.
And then it cranked. I'm like, yeah, baby, woo! I did that.
Yeah, that feeling of self-fulfillment from the 832. Got to hear their son's name called on the stadium PA for the first time this football season. Oh, yeah. That sense of pride when your kid on varsity making plays, baby. You're like, oh, man, this is something else entirely.
Tackled by Edward Figueroa.
Yeah, man. So, yeah, there's a lot of sad. I miss these two. 832, sending Deshaun Watson to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Just hear this is your problem now. Yeah. I respect that.
I will say I felt good when I first heard my song on the radio.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the first time.
That's huge.
Because it's, it was a big deal. I wish I could have got video of it or anything, just hearing it is just like, oh, I finally made it.
And then finally, watching Jalen Petrie hit Rashee Rice against the Chiefs. that one did scratch something back in the most violent
that visual
of our
going to live in my head forever,
a
man.
A long time.
Yeah. With Mike Tirico, pop, my Petrie.
You sure did. Texans did a decent amount of popping in this game last night. Again, 30-6, couple of defensive touchdowns and a number, four sacks on Aaron Rodgers, if memory serves.
Four sacks, 12 hits, 17 pressures.
If not like anybody's counting. Aaron Rodgers might be out of there, and it feels very much like he would. I'd put that at a very high percentage chance. What would you put the percentage chance that Mike Tomlin is out of there? Because that's been the conversation. It was the conversation leading into these playoffs, and that was not the type of performance that deads all conversation to the negative and contrary. So where do you think that this thing is when it comes to Mike Tomlin's safety in his job?
You only put a percentage on the percentage on him being back next year?
However you want to do it, whichever way you want to make
percentage
that
on him being back next year, I don't see how you can go much higher than 50-50.
Okay, so you're just going to go right split down the middle here.
Yeah, simply because incredible career, incredible run. Is it 19 years, 18 years as the head coach?
I believe 19 is the number.
I think it's 19. But you can't ignore – they have to be thinking about things. And by things, I mean 9 straight playoff losses.
Yes.
Seven
straight playoff losses,
seven straight
I believe.
Playoff
which
losses.
Ties Marvin Lewis for the most consecutive playoff losses in NFL history.
And then, so that's one of those where. Well,
and you know how people feel about Marvin Lewis.
He is getting us, he is getting us to the playoffs, but it's not winning. And then the sort of the difference between his first few years in Pittsburgh and his last few years in Pittsburgh. It's stark. So I know they're obviously appreciative of everything that he's done, but they have to be thinking about it.
I would imagine so. There was definitely there's definitely some issues that you can look at roster wise, and maybe that's actually a way that you can make the argument for moving on from Mike Tomlin is you've got some elder statesmen with the way that this is built. Just look at the defensive line: Cam Hayward, 36, T.J. Watt, getting a little bit up there, not to make it seem like he is ancient by any means, but the defensive secondary, there's a little bit of age in it, looking at like Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah.
Although you do have some young studs, Joey Porter Jr. looked really good in that game last night. It felt like every time that you were throwing a Nico Collins, that yellow glove of Joey Porter Jr. was in the catch pocket, making it tough or impossible for Nico to bring the ball in. But there's an opportunity to maybe make a turnover here where you get a new coach in and they can kind of start building the team in the image of what they want it to be.
And you're going to need a new quarterback.
You are. We had that conversation yesterday, I think. The idea of what has been one of the major issues that you could talk about with Mike Tomlin is not finding a quarterback and able to get you an opportunity to do more than just winning enough to get to the first round. And you're gonna be back in that place. What is the confidence level that the organization in that city has in Mike Tomlin to do that with the organization, knowing that it's not just him making the pick, but clearly they have not been able to do that. All of these things feel like the possibility of moving on from
him. And is he tired?
I don't think he is. I don't think he is at all. I think he loves coaching.
That's a different thing. I think you know, everything runs.
You think want to change in scenery?
Everything runs its course. Yeah. I think it's just the same thing year after year after year.
But
struggle, you know?
Do you feel like he, because I would think he want to change the scenery if he ain't had no say-so in the roster and all that stuff. Do you feel like he got a lot to say so and who to bring in and what to do?
I think clearly he has a say so. Now, to what degree now versus previously, I don't know. But I think he's sitting there. He understands all the things that you just mentioned. Need a quarterback. Roster's getting older. Do I really want to do that here again? Whereas you can get new life and be renewed somewhere else. Maybe sit out a year. I don't think he's tired of coaching, but he might just be tired of Pittsburgh.
That's interesting. I think that he's built that culture to exactly what he wants it, and having to go and establish that again. I think he can, and that's one of the reasons why, boy, did ESPN lay it on thick yesterday as well.
Yeah,
there's a lot of teams that would like him because I think there's a lot of places that need a culture builder that they could also know has a certain floor. And I think this is one of the best coaching carousels for that, with Harbaugh out there, possibly Tomlin being out there. But
in Pittsburgh, he's staying on the floor. You know, like, this is their floor for 7 years. You know, he's staying on the floor.
And then all the poor quarterback choices they had since Big Ben retired. I'm just kind of wonder. They're not satisfied with this at all.
No, they're not. A good text comes in from the 929. Empty playoff runs frustrate fans without question.
Yeah.
But owners love selling tickets to meaningful games every year. I will say that Art Rooney II, he seems to be, I mean, a stand-up guy in that, you know, they want to honor the legacy of what the Steelers are. And some of that is keeping Mike Tomlin and trying to, you know, have that level of steady hand and not turn this thing over too much. But it's getting to a place where they might need to make that decision.
Yeah, it seemed like, to me, I talked about the quarterbacks coming in, the coordinators that have been coming in was very questionable to me. I just feel like, man, I wouldn't be surprised if they decide to make a change.
Well, and you mentioned the owner, Reggie. A lot of owners talk about, we just want to win. The Rooney family, they are all about,
this ain't Cincinnati.
We want to win.
Yeah, this ain't Cincinnati. Yeah, they have a standard, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's going to be an interesting to watch now, interesting thing, because although I will say in their defense, which they don't need much of, and I will do this quickly and walk away from it very happily, that wasn't a game where I went, man, the Steelers really lost it.
Oh, no, and that's what bothered
me. They just got beaten into submission.
That's kind of like a mini confession, because I saw it last night. I've been seeing it a lot this morning and today. A lot of people are like, well, the Steelers offense couldn't do anything, and they're like blaming the Steelers offense. Nah, man, they put their hands around your throat and strangled you. You know, the guys in the white uniforms did a little something with that, you know?
Yeah, but in Pittsburgh, I mean, maybe
it's understandable.
Yeah, maybe that's national media, but Pittsburgh don't want to hear that.
Nah, I'm sure they don't. Nah. We'll watch from afar as they try and figure this out. But yet another season done. 10-win season, win the division. Or sorry, not 10-win season. They win the division and out immediately.
I think they did win 10 games.
They won 10 games. Sorry, I was thinking about the NFC South again. Yeah. The 8-9 NFC South. What a hilarious place. Some more people coming in with the things that are satisfying as retiring one Aaron Rodgers in the way that you did. How about watching Andre Johnson whip Corlin Finnegan's ass? That was good.
Had it up to here with that.
That one is so good. I just, every once in a while, do you ever just find yourself sitting around like, I want to watch that again?
Mm-hmm.
Just play it back real quick. We continue around the NFL here with some important news, I think, for the Texans now that they're looking forward to the New England Patriots, as the Patriots Pro Bowl cornerback Christian Gonzalez is also in the concussion protocol, as obviously we saw Nico Collins. And did you notice that Justin Watson was also in concussion protocol?
Yeah, I guess a special teams
thing. Yeah, and I was okay. I felt bad that I was just like, all right, whatever.
He played?
Yeah, that was very mean of me, because he's a part of the team, and obviously special teams matters quite a bit to this team. However, Christian Gonzalez out for them, and that's he was a first-round draft pick. He's been a very good cornerback for them. Does this at all offset the possibility, and I might even say probability, that Nico Collins does not play for your Texans on Sunday?
I don't know if offset is the word I would use. I just feel short week for Nico Collins. That's going to play a huge factor. You know, the teams are by and large out of it in the discussion of passing all the steps of the concussion protocol. You got to get those practices in, et cetera.
Yeah, it's five steps. A few of them you have to do an active practice where you only have two of those, Wednesdays and Thursday.
Yeah, so I think one is going to affect the other. It's going to be weird if, like, Christian Gonzalez plays and Nico Collins does not. Although I guess you could argue the shorter day, you know, the shorter week or whatever might do it. And just as a side note, I thought Nico Collins kind of got his bell rung on a previous play.
Really?
When he stepped out. I marked it in my passing thoughts, which you're going to get at noon. It was about six or eight plays before the one where he went forehead first on the ground.
Yeah, which that just looked, and when you went forward into the ground, and it's hard ground
about
as
six
well.
Or eight plays before that. I'm gonna rewatch it today and
look
and
at you maybe getting into the tape.
A lot of times I'll rewatch, but not the tape, you know, just the games.
Nah, you're gonna get into the tape. We're gonna make
I'm
you get into the
not
tape.
Not getting into the tape. I am not getting into
Lopez, what happened there? Is that an inside zone? What are we looking at?
Sure. So but it was about six or eight plays before. And I think some of our listeners may have picked up on it. You know, he kind of hit the ground sideways and got up and kind of he paused before he got up and then went straight to the sideline.
Mm.
Now, it could have been just a sub, but I thought he kind of got his bell rung on that.
Mm. Yeah, so, that's going to be very much a conversation that we'll have probably a little bit today and then as we continue forward. But, yeah, remember, the five-step process of clearing the protocol, there's like light activity, symptom-limited activity. So you have to start by not having symptoms and then be able to go through three or four steps of activity without symptoms. I will say, though, because remember that same process when Nico went through it before or when CJ went through it as well, they did not go out of their way to have additional practices that they could put in to see. I think that this time they absolutely would, right? If we get to Friday and, you know, there's
put on your pads, boys. Yeah. Wink, wink, wink.
Yeah, we want to make sure. Now, what sucks is you're also traveling where New England is not. So that might help the disparity between Christian Gonzalez and Houston, because are you going to be able to get in that kind of light, that activity if you're on the brink for the Texans on a travel day versus the Patriots being at home, having that day just as an extra day where they could get him through the concussion protocol? That will be something interesting.
I think if one is out, the other's going to be out. But there is an argument to be made. Christian Gonzalez has the extra day, doesn't travel, et cetera, that maybe he could play and Nico wouldn't, which would be very problematic.
Yeah. Some other things to make note of. As I mentioned, we have the lineup and what's happening. We mentioned that the Texans will face off against the Steelers as the first of two games on Sunday. It'll be 2 p.m. and you'll see the same people that you did yesterday. It'll be Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on the call. And then, of course, all of the ESPN Monday Night Football crew will be involved in calling that game. But otherwise, that's a short turnaround for the Texans. The Niners are also in a short turnaround circumstance. Kyle Shanahan, after the game, said, quote, when they beat the Eagles on Sunday, if the NFL is cool and understanding, they'll make it Sunday. They were not.
They're not cool nor understanding. And just, I want to go ahead and put that out there in case anybody missed it, because it was at the end of the game. It's going to be Bills Broncos, 3:30 p.m. Saturday on CBS.
Cool.
And then the game you just mentioned, Niners at Seahawks, 7 p.m. on Fox.
So they will have, again, 6 days, just like the Texans.
Yes. And 2 p.m. Sunday on ESPN and ABC, Texans at Patriots, and then the wrap-up, 5:30 p.m. On Sunday, which is, there's going to be some overlap there, on NBC, is Rams and Bears.
Yeah. So how heavy did you lean into the conversation here? Because I know Tony Dungy got really into it as well, the idea of the way that the NFL goes about this time disparity between games in this wild card and divisional round, because you're not giving yourself the opportunity of the best product possible, leaning into just getting these big primetime numbers, especially like on a Monday night game.
What's the option? That would be my answer.
Three games on Saturday, three games on Sunday.
You want to do that?
They could easily do that and not have that Monday night game. I know that we had a lot of fun watching it, but you inherently have create mm-hmm. a slight disparity for that team on Monday night who is moving on, even if you put the game on Sunday like they did.
Yeah, I don't think the NFL has any interest in that.
No qualms. They're like, get up and play football. We do not care.
They own days, and they like owning days, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of one of those games, though, the Bills, who I think we're rooting for if we're going to create the Texans rooting guide.
Yeah.
I think you want to root for the Bills for the opportunity mm-hmm. to have an AFC championship game at home should you do what you're supposed to do in New England on Sunday. Well, they will not have Gabe Davis. He has torn his ACL. He's going to be out. And I believe Jordan Poyer, their mm-hmm. safety, is also out versus the Broncos. So that is actually a huge hit mm-hmm. to the Bills as they go on and go and play a Broncos team that has not played in a couple weeks.
And, you know, we understand what Josh Allen is and what he can do, but they don't have the deepest of wide receiver rooms as it is.
Yes, yeah. They already, yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why they were susceptible to the Texans mm-hmm. is they have to keep maximum number of dudes in routes because yeah. they don't have the top-end talent in their receiving core. That gets even rougher as Gabe Davis will not be able to play for them, suffered a major knee injury, according to Sean McDermott.
A couple of texters said, yes, he actually went to the medical tent in the first quarter, but he just went briefly, came back out, went back into the game.
That's Nico Collins, yes. You mean?
They're going to look at that. They're going to look at that.
You think the Texans could get fined for that?
No. The NFL, when it comes to protocol, they're going to say, wait a minute, why did you go in there? And that, you know, they're going to try to make sure. I thought it was the case. I didn't know that he went into the medical tent briefly, but yeah. So he was looked a little loopy twice, and the yeah. second one was a lot worse.
I don't think that I can make any assumptions off of that, but I can tell you it feels bad, mm-hmm. right, having that yeah. be the case. But if you are rooting for the Bills, which it seems like a few of our texters are, what will make you feel a little bit better is Ed Oliver he's back practicing, and I think that would lead to him actually playing in that game, and they do need some help on that defensive line.
Who's rooting for the Bills around here?
I think a lot of people are. All right, that's around the NFL here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610 on a Victory Reaction Tuesday here. Coming up next, we got to talk about it. C.J. Stroud, it was a rough game, and he looked nervous, out of sorts, frustrated at times. What's wrong? What felt like it was wrong? How you know, pervasive is this? Let's talk through the C.J. Stroud performance in that wild card game next.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Woody Marks in the backfield, Stroud in the gun on third down at 15 from the Houston 18. Bunch formation left, Stroud takes the snap. CJ looking, CJ stepping up. CJ firing downfield to his right, and he has Kirk across the 40. It's Steeler territory and out of bounds. Oh my goodness, what a play from CJ to Kirk.
On the play prior to that, CJ Stroud had fumbled the snap and had to recover it. And if that wasn't a microcosm of the entirety of this football game for one, C.J. Stroud, a fumbled snap, a mistake of sorts, and then on the back half of that, finding just a beautiful throw mm-hmm. with protection to Christian Kirk, who had a phenomenal game, in fact, notched the most receiving yards of any Houston Texan in a playoff game. That was a microcosm of this game offensively for C.J. Stroud in particular and for this offense at large. So let's have the conversation, because C.J. Stroud looked like a lot of things in this game, and not all of them were good.
I actually don't think it was a microcosm of the game. I think he was largely bad. He had some moments, but he was largely very, very bad. Now, I want to make sure, you know, people coming in and out of the show understand, I started this show saying, this is the year, isn't it? I believe that. I believe it's fair to say that out loud because this defense is that good. I think at the end of the year, we're going to look back on this defense and say, man, that's one of the greatest ever. And if things go the Texans' way, we might be saying, man, they finally did it. You know, that defense carried this team to a Super Bowl. We could easily be saying that. I don't think anybody would blink their eyes if that happened. Obviously, we'd be thrilled. But when you talk about C.J. Stroud, just an average C.J. Stroud, just the mean, you know, of quarterback play. And this is absolutely a Super Bowl team.
Sure.
I mean, 100%.
That capability, it feels like it's yeah. there, and it feels like that was further proof of it, seeing the defense.
But he was largely bad. You can't sugarcoat that.
Well, let's hear from C.J. Stroud yeah. and how he felt about it. C.J., you know, how were you able to bounce back from the two really bad plays?
You know, we had some problems with the snaps. Me catching them, you know, got to find a way just to catch him and then take care of the ball. You know, we knew on tape that they did a good job of, you know, punching at the ball or trying to, you know, get you to, while you're throwing, get your throwing arm. So, you know, I try to work on that throughout the week. But they made plays, and I think these games, the playoffs games, from my experience, like, they're going to make plays, we're going to make plays. It's all about, you know, moving forward and, you know, trying your best to, you know, flush it and keep going. So, you know, I thought, you know, when every time we had to bounce back, you know, we made more plays. So, I mean, I'm proud of our guys for having a little bit of resilience in those moments. And, you know, to finish the game like that was really dope.
No question he had his moments, and I'm not trying to take away from those moments. All I'm saying is, if you're running a balance, you're balancing the scales here. The scale tipped in one way. He looked. Shout out to Christian Kirk too. What an incredible game he had. I think worth every penny, even though the regular season might not have been what we thought. But he looked nervous. He looked out of sorts. He looked kind of at moments, kind of like frustrated, something of a basket case. I mean, he had five.
That's fumbles. Heavy. That's heavy words to use.
I said something of a basket case, and I'll say it again. He looked like it.
Yeah, no, I was listening to the broadcast, the radio broadcast, and even Andre Ware was like, man, he was kind of, he was giving me the Laramie Tunsil feels when he was kept jumping off sides. He was kind of giving those feels to it. I'm like, man, what's going on? At that point, I'm like, it got to be mental.
We have to be honest. I think this is a Super Bowl team, flat out. But he was bad last night.
That was not a good
performance. And all he has to do is be average. What was it, five fumbles?
Yeah, five fumbles.
Interception.
Yes. And it was a bad interception.
That was a bad interception.
So it was
red zone interception.
Did y'all want to hear the call for that interception?
Yes, please.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back. We're better. Let's get it.
Stroud shotgun, shoved to his right, two receivers wide, side left, stacked up. CJ puts the leg down on third and four. Here's the snap. Stroud looking, Stroud pumping, Stroud in trouble. Stroud throws last moment, and it's picked off by Echols. Rolls down, and he's going to be brought down. That's three turnovers in the game. He didn't have to do it, Dre. He could have.
I don't understand what he's doing tonight. I really don't understand what's going on between the ears of CJ Stroud tonight. Just throw it away, kick a field goal. You've got 3 points in your back pocket right there. Take the field goal, and let's keep it moving. You don't have to throw the ball just for the sake of throwing it, and God forbid, don't just throw it up over the middle for somebody to just grab it and grab an interception, create momentum for the Steelers.
Yeah, besides the momentum thing. Yeah. But I it really did feel uncharacteristic. Mm-hmm. And the question I think we were asking ourselves was why? One of the things that I was thinking of, and I texted you guys this, I'm not saying that this absolves him of some things because I think we have very much to talk about the notion that it feels very much like he was pressing in a way that feels odd. Mm-hmm. But I did wonder, were his hands cold? Because the ways that he was not catching the football or fumbling the football, letting the football fly out of his hands. Now, one of them was the flea flicker where you wait too long, you let pressure get to you, and then they hit your hand. That's just a football thing of a quarterback not having the presence, feeling that presence in the pocket or just being a little greedy and wanting that deep shot too much to not give it to the football.
Yeah,
I think that one's there.
I can't do that.
I wonder, though, with the other ones where stupid to step up in the pocket into pressure. But then the ball just kind of slips out of his hand there. There's instances where, with the snap, Jake Andrews is not putting it right on the money, but it's catchable, and he's not catching it. And it makes me wonder, are your hands cold to the point where you're not having the right sensation? And then why do you not have hand warmers in that moment if that is the case? This is me trying to find answers because if not, those plays in particular, like those instances of holding on to the football, just that portion of it, don't make sense to me.
Yeah, I can't go there, man. I mean, you know, I just... Your hand's cold. I just can't go there because it doesn't explain. Even if your hands were cold and it maybe slips a little bit, you're still trying to like just sort of fumbling the ball out of your arm or getting hit and letting go of the ball or throwing a really bad pass as you just heard from Andre Johnson. I mean,
Andre Ware.
I mean, from Andre Ware. I just can't go there. I think it's, as Andre Ware said, it's a between the ears thing. I can't explain why. But ultimately, again, just be average because he cost the Texans at least 9 points last night when the game was still very, very close. It was 7-6. maybe 17, because on that one, that was clearly at least 3 points, might have been seven. At the end of the half, he had a wide open Nico Collins that would have put him on about the 30-yard line.
And he bullets that thing and yes. mustered too high.
There was nobody over there.
There was no reason for him to do that.
Wide open. Way, so that's another at least 3 yes. points. And maybe you take a shot into the end zone there. And then there was a three after a fumble, which, to the defense's credit, they only gave up those 3 points on the turnover. But that's at minimum 9 points, perhaps 17 points. And that wasn't because your hands were cold.
No.
Made some mistakes.
And I am far from saying that those have any reason. Yeah. It's the small things of why is he not holding on to the football. That was a portion of it because that was some of the turnovers. The actual play itself, very much, he was pressing. Mm-hmm. And it was so odd because it felt like he had done such a lot of work within the system to buy into the thought process of just protect the football, make the plays that are there to be made, get rid of the ball if there's not plays to be made. And it felt like early on in this game, before you even would have reason to press, he was pressing. And that was odd. And I don't know how to spin that forward because in some ways, if he gets back to doing what he had been doing in the weeks prior, I think that you see a performance that is incredibly dominating as opposed to just the regular dominating that you had here. But two, that popped up out of nowhere, and it worries me about whether he's handling the pressure right in these moments.
What worries me is it compounding itself. Because keep in mind, early in the year, he would have a bad game, excuse me, or a bad stretch, and it compounded itself to the next game. Remember?
Yeah.
That's my worry. And you know, God bless D'Amico Ryans. He's been saying, just don't turn over the ball. Don't get too greedy. Don't, get ahead of yourself. That's exactly what he needs to do going into New England, especially with perhaps no Nico Collins.
Yeah, and within this game, even, he had at least moments. We played one of them where he had one of those moments and immediately steps in and delivers a good ball. The thing that was frustrating is even some of the good plays that he made within this game, as a texter does note as well, he seemed to make them just a little bit harder because the placement was a little off.
The Kirk touchdown.
It was an off game that he made a little bit, he made more difficult. And I don't quite know exactly what to do with that. We've seen him be capable of playing a much steadier game and an even better game than that. Mm-hmm. And it was neither of those. Like, I don't want to make it seem like he was atrocious in this game because he did have
a number
of plays and a number of good decisions. But I think also they had to kind of put some guardrails around him in this game in a way that was really uncomfortable.
Well, I was talking about this before the show, half kiddingly, not all the way kiddingly, in terms of just the scope of the game. He was like the kid that got an A on a project but didn't do anything because everybody else handled it for him. All the honor students in his group handled it for him.
Yeah, I wonder if we would have had a different tone to this if they won 7-6. Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder how people would have really felt if this game was 7-6 instead of 30-6.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of people, heck just in the hallway right now. Somebody was so excited. Hey, man, I think, they're going to go to the Super Bowl, and we're chatting. And he's like, yeah, but what's C.J. Stroud going to do? Yeah, what's C.J. Stroud going to do? It's bizarre. Remember yesterday I was talking about, does he want to be, great? Has he watched all these games and said, I'm going to carry the load? When you talk about pressing, that's kind of where I went. It's like he's trying to make the super duper spectacular play, No, man, you don't need to do that.
Yeah, and maybe this game is encouragement within it, first and foremost, that you actually won it when your quarterback had a number of turnovers. 5 times putting the ball on the ground. Five fumbles, three times the ball goes the other way, and you actually get out of it with the victory. That rarely happens, but maybe that is enough to catalyze it for him where he goes, all right, I don't need to feel the pressure. And I imagine D'Amico Ryans and the rest of the coaches are going to try and sit him down and reiterate that to him because it took him out of being the quarterback that he's capable of. Like, in trying to push forward and, push for more, he made himself worse, and that is unabidable. Now, I think that could be the encouragement within this if you choose to try and find the silver lining is that's so anomalous.
He hadn't turned the ball over.
He hadn't turned the ball over this year. He hadn't fumbled the ball like that before. Like, that was such an anomaly that maybe the way that happens, looking back at it, you can very much flush it the way that he says that he can or says that you should. And that will be the anomaly. And if you get the bad game and it did not ultimately tank you, maybe that is the good thing within this, right? He got the bad game out and he will stray further away from it. But that was not a good game from C.J. Stroud, and thankfully you get the victory nonetheless.
Yes, 100%.
All right, and you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping on this day, including we haven't been able to talk about this yet, but Indiana looks like the best team in the nation. Let's talk about that more. All right, let's get into what's popping here on a Victory Reaction Tuesday for your Houston Texans after they beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 30-6 in Pittsburgh at Acrisure Stadium. Revenge of Mike Renfro, so on and so forth happening. We were talking about the CJ thing. Somebody said, hey, you could always look at it as CJ may have cost the Texans a few points.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't cost them 13 like Aaron Rodgers did. And that was with the missed extra point.
Kind of did.
By the way, what happened with that? What happened with the extra point?
That was weird. And the replay, it looked like a clean hit.
Yeah, it looked like, I was like, all right, so clearly something happened with the hold.
Yeah.
Hold looked fairly good.
Yeah. Even Kaimi was looking, hey, wait, huh?
Yeah. It was like one of those.
He looked confused.
He just hit like a worm burner.
It looked like one of those bouncy balls that goes in different directions and stuff.
No, I think, who was it? I think it was Troy Aikman made it up perfect. He said it looked like somebody kicking for Pat McAfee trying to win $1,000.
Yeah.
$1,000? $200,000.
However many dollars he has in there. Somebody on the YouTube page made a hilarious point. Is there a level of appreciation or respect that one has to give to one David Culley?
That was so funny.
Because David Culley used to say, hey, man, we could go 3-and-out and punt.
We good.
And in this game, it feels like they could have done that, does it not?
Well, he wasn't wrong. He was just ahead of his time.
Never wrong, just early.
That might be their game plan, to be honest.
It's not entirely out of their game plan. I mean, they'd rather punt, that's for sure. But David Culley, ahead of his time.
Yeah.
As we don't get it, we good.
Said, as people have often said.
Especially David with that Culley, defense.
Yeah. Ahead of his time. By the way, as we talk about what's popping is the Texans social media team has absolutely reached flow state. They are in a fantastic place. I mean, ESPN on their homepage is writing about the Texans trolls that are the Texans page trolls that they're getting in. They had at least, and I'm looking at it right now. The Houston Texans had a how to win 10 games straight graphic that looks like in the mold of How to Lose a Man in 10 Days. Is that the name of the movie or whatever?
Yeah.
With Caleb Bullock and Lassiter. They had a Fallout video game reference. In addition to that, they had a number of anime references. They are just cooking.
They are.
On this social media page. And it feels like as much as you talk about everything on the field, does it not also feel like the organization is hitting their stride for Super Bowl run two?
It's funny how that works out. You know, everything is happy and healthy, and all of a sudden everybody just kind of rides the wave, man.
They really are riding the wave indeed. Some other things that are popping. The Rockets back in action tonight. They'll face off against the Bulls, a team that has been okay this year. Josh Giddey has actually been really good, oddly enough. Bouzelis has been really good for them, and then Ayo Dosunmu has been solid as well. Those are some names that you might need to know. I am really looking at this team, and Ime Udoka has even said it, right? In fact, here's Ime Udoka, if you don't mind, talking about how reliant they have been on Kevin Durant.
What went wrong in the third quarter? It seemed like you guys were in command heading in.
Take a 37-year-old out of the game for 2 minutes, and you lose a 13-point lead, 11-0 run. That's what went wrong. Don't play with any aggression, confidence, mentally weak, and have a 15-point quarter, 1-for-17 from three. I think a bunch of wide-open looks. Making shots help, but you have to guard on one end. You have to play with some aggression on one end, drive it physically, take care of the ball and not turn it over. So all of the above. But the fact that we have to rely on a 37-year-old for 40-plus minutes is a problem.
And it is. I mean, do you detect any lies there?
I don't. Yeah. I think this will be interesting in this game tonight to see how they respond to being called out by their coach. That's something that Ime has done from time to time. And in the recent years, the Rockets have responded well to that. This is a different Rockets team. I'm interested to see how they respond, especially because a lot of the edge of this team, as much as we could talk about a man or whatever, it felt like Dylan Brooks was some of that. I want to see some of that edge again, as it's clear Ime does
100%
as well. And this is an interesting team to do it against, a fairly young Bulls team That's not a great team, but can get on you if you're not careful. I think that this is the perfect chance for them to demonstrate that they can find, you know, deep within themselves,
or start to find, because
the reserves.
Because he's not wrong. You're starting to wonder, okay, is it the whole, well, we got Kevin Durant, you know, he'll rescue us kind of thing going on. And it's also the defensive effort, as he pointed out, and what you pointed out as well.
The larger conversation that we're probably going to need to have, though, is the point guard thing keeps coming up.
Oh, yeah.
And as we are starting near the trade deadline, we're going to have to look kind of realistically at what are the options, mm-hmm. and have they adequately taken advantage of the in-house option that is Reed Shepard? Like, one of the things that Ime Udoka, I knew that he was going to do is he was going to tax Reed off of the defense.
Mm-hmm.
At what point does that become something where you just kind of need to get over it and see what you can do with Reed, even defense be damned? Because, as he mentioned, you are relying a lot
and you're not on Kevin Durant. You're not the defensive team you were. I mean, does that reason to leave him out there? No, but it's not like he's costing you. Well, I mean, he is. They attacked him. I think the second Portland game was very evident. But either way, you certainly can use some help on the other side of the court.
I just need to say this real quick because it will annoy my co-host, John Lopez. We are within a month of pitchers and catchers reporting for the Houston Astros to spring training.
Cool.
Very good. All right. Some other things that are what's popping. I told you it would annoy him. Shout out to the Indiana Hoosiers on Friday getting a decisive victory to the point where I could feel the TV switching all over the country away from that Peach Bowl. What was the most impressive thing about that game? Because I can tell you what honestly it might be is the building being 80% Indiana fans versus Oregon.
That shocked me. Oregon has always traveled. Huge fan base. But Indiana said, screw that. Whatever they're charging, we're going to pay. It was at least 80%.
It was a lot.
It was a home game.
A lot of red.
That was one surprise. The other surprise on the field, I mean, people thought, whoa, Alabama. Boy, did they really bleep the bed. No, it ain't Alabama. It was.
It's a little Alabama.
It was Indiana. Was it Oregon? No. It was Indiana.
It was a little Oregon.
How? Why? Much like the Texans defense. Yeah, and Steelers.
Actually, that's not a terrible comparison. Well, I think the Texans are better at their trade right now.
But what I'm saying
is
Steelers people and fans saying, oh, our offense think, no, man, they strangled you. Oh, Alabama's not as good as we thought. No, man, they strangled you. Same thing with Oregon.
Can I tell you the thing about Indiana that it feels weird that not a lot of people are talking about? I'm not trying to do the thing where nobody's talking about this, because people are, but it's just not as loud as I think it should be. Are we seeing kind of the NCAA tournamentification of what's happening in college football wise? How often do you see teams do well in the NCAA tournament basketball wise because they have kids that have played together for 3, 4, 5 years?
Oh, I think that's a big part of it. And also a very determined and planned strategy of bringing in not just transfers, but transfers with a lot of experience where they were. Because Indiana has a lot of transfers. They didn't grow up together as Hoosiers, you know, in the Hoosier program.
They got a lot of JMU dudes who've been together for 4 seasons, and a lot of fourth and fifth year guys as well.
And but I think what they're bringing in, like their average age is 23. The average age of their starting offense and defense is 23 years old. So it's veteran guys that have seen a lot, you know.
Without question. So that's an interesting thing. We'll talk more about college football as we near the national championship game next week, but that was really fun, and we hadn't had an opportunity to salute Indiana, and that's some of what's popping. Also, speaking of fifth year players, Trinidad Chambliss is suing the NCAA. He's not winning this, is he?
I don't know. I
Diego Pavia loses his.
Yeah.
I feel like we're at a place where you're probably not winning any more eligibility.
The thing is, he's going to get drafted, so it's not like he's going to take a pay cut. You know, he's going to get drafted high. But he's just 6 year looking for a sixth year, right?
Yeah, he's looking for a sixth year, which that has happened a decent amount, especially in with players that went through the COVID year and the eligibility waivers that happened there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he gets that. Also worth noting, Dylan Raiola, he will go to Oregon, so at least he won't have the color to keep mimicking the Patrick Mahomes thing. Do you think he's going to keep trying to mimic Patrick Mahomes in green?
Oh, yeah.
At Oregon.
Absolutely.
I hope that he breaks that trend.
Because he's good.
He's good.
He can stand on his own.
Also, you know what's nice? I feel like Oregon, and this is only minor shade to Nebraska, mm-hmm. Oregon is a place where they have enough, self-respect mm-hmm. to not lean into that. I feel like Nebraska, football-wise, they've been down enough to where they're like, yeah, we'll allow this. I feel like Oregon's like, hey, man.
Yeah, but it's up to him.
They might just be, hey, dog, get yourself in line, man. Yeah. Worry about this football. So, yeah, that's what's popping here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get some of the OG's passing thoughts after a big-time victory versus the Pittsburgh on Wild Card Weekend. The Texans Tuesday, when it comes to reacting, continues next.
It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.